Here's how insane you are and this whole thing is, all right? And this is truly madness, ladies and gentlemen. You're telling me that a kid can go to a public school in Massachusetts, immediately upon entering the school, take off the kid's shirt and put on a dress, all right? Go to the girls' room when he's a boy, and then change his name from John to Tiffany. And then after school, put the shirt back on. That's such a violation of parental rights by the state of Massachusetts. It's off the chart. And we don't even want to get into the locker room situation here.
Well, they're talking about
unisex rooms
as well.
I know a lot of wise guys who would exploit this. Madness, you decide.
Oh my goodness. You know, hi everybody. How you doing? It's the Rebecca Juro Show. My God, you know, you wonder, Mr. Mike. You wonder if this is like, if he really genuinely, if Bill O'Reilly, because obviously that was Bill O'Reilly, if he really feels this way, if that's his true logic, or if he just makes this shit up to, like, to appeal to an audience. I have to ask that question. I mean, because here's a guy, I mean, you know, whatever you think of his politics, I mean, he has parlayed his abilities into a multi-million dollar career. He's got one of the most popular shows on television. He can't be as stupid as he seems. Can he really?
Well, I was going to say, you know, that crazy, mad, am I? Was he going to say that?
I just don't, you know, it makes me nuts. It makes, well, a lot of things
well,
make
he's
me
nuts,
as you well know from listening to this show. But, I mean, here's a guy. I mean, first of all, he's presuming that the parents don't accept anything, okay? I mean, whereas, as we well know, more and more cases, parents are lining up, and parents are saying, if this is what my child needs to be happy, then I'm going to support it, you know? I mean, the difference is O'Reilly is living in the days when, you know, people like me, I mean, I'm 50 years old. When I was that age, there was no, it was not possible. But you know what? We also didn't have things like Chaz Bono and Laverne Cox and all the, even, God help us, RuPaul even. I mean, although I hesitate to call RuPaul a trans woman, people know how I feel on that one. I'm not going to, I could spend a half hour on that. I'm not going there because we got too much to cover tonight. We have got shitloads. I'm telling you, shitloads of news to get into tonight. We have got coming up at the bottom of the hour, Dana Buyer, who you know or you love her. You've heard her on the show a number of times. She's going to be calling in with an update on the Maryland trans rights bill. We've got an article that was recently published. It looks like the New York trans rights bill is also moving forward. We'll talk about that. And in addition, we've got Leslie Mariah Andrews, and Leslie, who is a musician, spit it out, Becky, is a musician herself and also hosts a music radio show on the radio, and she's a trans woman, and we'll get into it with her. And I'll tell you, it's interesting. I went to, well, some of you know, two interesting things happened to me over the past week. One you may already know about, one maybe not. The first one was I was in an interview at CNN. You may have seen it. If you follow Facebook, it was all over the frickin' place on Facebook, which is fine. I did an interview about something I know a lot about, transgender unemployment. And we have a couple of clips. I hate to toot my own horn, but actually I thought I came off pretty well. I'm never happy with my physical appearance, but I thought the interview itself, they had good clips, you know. You always wonder, you always worry when they're doing a trans feature. It's like, am I going to look like an idiot? Am I going to sound like an idiot? Are they going to make me look like a freak? Blah, blah, blah. None of those kind of worries. These were good folks. They were doing a good story. They asked good questions. I could not be happier with the result. Mr. Mike, how many clips? You have a couple of clips, I understand, that you yanked out of this thing, right?
I have two clips. One is we call a reentry in the radio biz. You know, it's this thing where we come back for music. And
oh,
Becky,
well,
I
did this.
Comes
and
out
I
of
should
the music.
Point out to people that when they hear this, I did this during the day to give them, they wanted me, a shot of me doing some radio. So this is not actually, this was not actually ever said during the show itself. This was just kind of a re-entry that I did to give them something to shoot. And so here, why don't you play that one first, Mr. Mike?
All right, we're back. And it is the Rebecca Giro Show. Thanks for sticking around. And we were talking about the Employment Non-Discrimination Act.
Runs an online radio show out of her study. She thinks the issue of employment discrimination is even more important than same-sex marriage, which dominates the media today.
Jobs are the engine that make marriage possible. And if you don't have a job and you don't have a safe and comfortable place to live, well, the right to marry isn't going to do you much good.
Blake Ellis, CNN Money, New Jersey.
Yeah, well, that was the first one. And that actually was, that ended the clip. And Blake Ellis was terrific. I have to say, all kudos to her. She was absolutely wonderful. The people she brought with her, they actually brought a crew down to my house, a video producer, a camera lady. I'm not sure of the right, you know, sometimes there's certain professions where, you know, you're used to using a masculine for so much that then when it's not a man, you're kind of...
Camera operator.
Well, fair enough. Camera woman. I mean, I don't know. Does that sound right? Is that a... I don't know. Anyway, they were terrific folks, and they were really... really good folks, and I was happy to have them there. And, you know, this has been getting a lot of attention, which is kind of cool. I got to tell you, I'm so glad that people are picking up on it.
Jobs give.
Yeah, jobs. It's nice that, you know, it's funny because during this thing, there was actually, I said during the interview that I live with my mother, and you don't reveal stuff like that on nationwide whatever. It wasn't actually television, but it was their website. Unless, you know, I kind of felt like I complain about this stuff on my show all the time, about the lack of coverage of employment rights for LGBT people. So I kind of felt that when they came to me and said, hey, we're doing a story, we want you to participate, I kind of felt, because actually I got in touch with them because Bill Browning from the Blerico Project wrote to me and said, hey, you want to be a part of this, write to this person. And so when you're given this opportunity, I mean, after all the spouting off I've done on this issue, I felt like, well, I have to. I have to give my all and everything that I can do to help this process along. How can I not be a total hypocrite? That was the kind of the way I felt. So, you know, I answered everything they asked as accurately and as, you know, as completely as I could. And, you know, it was, there were parts that were not easy to talk about. I mean, who wants to talk about, you know, you've been unemployed for 4 years, yada, yada. I mean, it's not an easy thing to talk about, but I felt that I had a certain obligation because I make it an issue on this show and I write about it and I complain about it. So when somebody comes up to me and says, here's a way for you to help and here's a way for you to put yourself into the conversation in a way that's not, you know, I resist like doing the full-on activist kind of thing because I see myself as a media person, as more of a reporter, an opinion columnist, an opinion talk show host kind of thing. I'm cautious about how far I get myself involved with pure activism because I don't want it to be seen that I'm a cheerleader, that I'm more, or at least I try to be, more of an analyst than a cheerleader. Maybe I don't always succeed, but I give it my best try, you know. So when they came to me and I said, you know what, I'm just going to be completely honest and I'm going to do the best I can. And apparently it was well received, from folks that I heard, I'll shift gears a little bit because I'll tell you the other thing that I was doing, this weekend I went to something that was called the 2013 LGBT Media Convening. And, basically what that was a group of LGBT journalists and bloggers and, well, you know, me, the internet radio host, and you know, and a group of folks who were a lot of names you would know, okay? I mean, now I'm not revealing anything because the list of attendees has been published publicly on the Bellerico Project, so I'm not revealing anything, but I got to meet some amazing, amazing people last weekend. In addition to Bill Browning and Jeremy Davis, who, of course, are from the Bellerico Project, and, of course, Jeremy was the executive director of National Stonewall Democrats for a while they were still around. We're not really sure what the deal is there. But I've known those guys through Bellerico for years. This was the first time we met in person. We had a wonderful time. I met some folks who have been on this show. Mike Rogers, who you may remember from back when I had the Ed Schultz article on the Huffington Post, and we had him on to hash that one out. He's great, wonderful man. All kinds of people. Monica Roberts, who we've had on the show, was there. We had a great time hanging out. Trying to think of some other people who you guys would know. Kelly Busey. You know, it's hard because, you know, when you're thinking about this, I can think of all these names swirling around. It's like, well, who would know? Well, if you read Gay City News out of New York, you may know the names Paul Schindler and Andy Hum. Both of them were there. If you ever watched Gay USA, you know his co-host, Ann Northrup. Awesome, awesome people. They've been doing this kind of work since long before people like me ever got involved.
Good show. Often runs on cable wonderful access stations. And what else has that on there? Do you know?
I know they're on Dish TV.
Free Speech TV, sure.
Free Speech TV, yeah. They're on Dish. I usually, when I watch them online because I don't get Dish anymore. I hate Dish. We got rid of Dish a while ago.
Oh, there's Charlie
But they're
Ergen
available
for you
online. Gay USA, look it up. Good stuff. Good, good, good stuff. All kinds of people. And, of course, Mara Kiesling was there. It was the first time I'd seen her in been a while, probably about 7 or 8 years that we've seen each other in person, although we've been friends all along. And of course, and by the way, not for nothing, but she will be on the show next week to talk with us. I also met Allison Robinson. We're gonna get her scheduled. She has said she's gonna be on. We're gonna have some cool people. Chris Geidner. If you read him on BuzzFeed, used to be with Metro Weekly. He is one of the best LGBT issues reporters out there. We're going to have him on the show. You know, now, so a lot of these people, Mara is scheduled. A lot of these folks I have not yet scheduled, so I'm just throwing names out there. Allison Robinson will be on the show. I was just trading emails last night with Diego Sanchez. He's going to be on the show. We got all kinds of people and all kinds of great stuff. I'm intentionally not sharing everything because I want to do a little bit more background and setting up and things like that before I go and start announcing huge amounts of names. But there's a few for you right there. And we had a really good time. What was great about this thing was it was all these journalists and bloggers were crowded into this hotel. The first night, we go off to Comcast, the Comcast building in Philadelphia, probably the tallest building, I think, in Philadelphia. Huge. We're up at near the top. We had dinner with the Philadelphia skyline all around us. Amazing, amazing, amazing. And then we got home. We got back to the hotel. We had a good time. We're hanging out with these folks, having a good time. The next day, Saturday, we had sessions. We talked immigration. We talked all kinds of things. There was a Getting Beyond Trans 101, which was really good. Mara and Allison Robinson led that one. That was terrific. Lots of good stuff. And really, you know, a lot of good questions were asked. And it was really educational for me, you know, because, who do you look to when you're looking to report on these things. Well, you look to the folks who have been on before, among other people who were there, Matt Foreman was there, former head of NGLTF, and now with the Haas Fund, who underwrote this whole deal, which was it was awesome. They did a terrific job. All these great people. I mean, I could go on and on and on. The list is just endless. All kinds of people. Joe Jervis was there from Joe My God. I got to talk to him. You know, it was just, you learn a lot just from interacting with people, because you learn where people are and what motivates them to write on stuff. Because let's be honest, I mean, journalists are human beings. They write what interests them, and that's the way it should be. And so I got a lot out of it personally. Then Saturday night, after the sessions were over, myself, Mara, and four other gender variant women decide we're going out for Chinese food. And so we got this group together, and we went out to Chinatown, which was only a few blocks from where our hotel was. And we had a lovely dinner, talked politics, and I got a little louder than I probably should have, and that's okay. But we had a great conversation, great, great conversation. And so that was wonderful. And Sunday, of course, Saturday night we went, and then we went back, and journalists know how to drink. I will just say that right now. But in any case, then Sunday we had a lovely brunch in the neighborhood, and we did a tour. We saw Liberty Bell and a few other sites and gay history sites, which were kind of cool. Got to see they're building a new senior housing area, a new senior housing in the neighborhood. Or just a few steps from the neighborhood, if you want to count it. I don't know, depending on where you draw the lines. And anyway, we got to see the beginnings of that, and it was a great weekend. I had a great time, and it was wonderful people. I hope they invite me next year, because I had a blast. These folks are really good, and everyone was so welcoming and so just. I mean, it was really, people were there to compare notes and to hang out with each other and get to know people. And, you know, you get to see a side of people in a lot of cases that you don't get to see when you're just talking to them on the air or and it's very interesting. And I'm very glad and very, appreciative that they got in touch with me and asked me to come. And I hope they do it next year, because I would love to go again. But anyway, all right. So enough gushing about my weekend. I had a good old time, as you can imagine. Probably drank more in the 2 days than I did in the last 2 years. But all right. Didn't matter. We were having fun when it was time to have fun, and when it was time to talk issues it was great. I mean, I learned so much, particularly immigration. We heard from somebody named Bambi Salcido, who I'm going to see if we can get her on the show. There's somebody who's an up-and-coming activist, deals with issues important to trans immigrants, very, very important and brand new, really. A new issue that we haven't heard a lot about in the mainstream. And it's indicative, I hope, of a change that we're experiencing here. The fact that CNN comes and says we want to do a story on transgender unemployment, that says something. The fact that all of a sudden Tom Harkin says we're going to move end of this year. The fact that, as we're going to talk about when we come back from our break, which we're going to go to in just another moment, the House and the Senate have passed the Violence Against Women Act, LGBT inclusive, baby.
Yeah.
Which is just incredible and totally unexpected. And we will get into that a little bit when we come back. In the meantime, We're going to Mr. Mike is going to play a second clip from my CNN interview, and then we'll go into something from Coyote Grace, and we will catch you guys in five.
I just couldn't live with myself looking at myself in a mirror and seeing a man. I either have to go buy a gun and kill myself, or I have to do something about this. And so I decided I was going to give it a try.
That try meant switching genders. Rebecca Juro became a woman in 1997.
I was working as a man. I went to my boss after a period where I said, this is what I'm going to do. Very quickly, I was out of a job. Basically, I was just dismissed. And I said, this has to be illegal, right? Well, surprise, it wasn't illegal.
Now it is. At least in Rebecca's home state of New Jersey, it is now illegal to fire a person because he or she is transgender. But for 55% of Americans, and in most states, discrimination against workers because of their gender identity is still not outlawed. Even with the law and years of experience in retail, Rebecca has found it hard to keep a job.
They would find fault or issuing disciplinary notices for silly things that nobody else would ever get in trouble for. I never had these problems when I was working as a man. I just couldn't live with myself.
What you are to me.
I am Criswell. This is a story of those in the twilight time. Once human, now monsters. Monsters to be pitied. Monsters to be despised from the innermost depths of the world.
It's Sheryl Crow. We've run out of music.
Oh, no! We've run out of music. Okay.
We're going to get Dana on the line.
We are back, I guess.
We are back. There was a minor little issue with Skype, so Dana couldn't call us, so I'm going to try Dana here. Hi, Dana. I'm calling.
We're going to have Dana Byer on to tell us what's going on in Maryland with that effort. And then we've also got Leslie Mariah Andrews, who we'll be getting to in a little while just after, trans artist. And she also has her own radio show, which is very cool. And coming up in coming weeks, I'm not sure exactly when they're going to be on. We're working out the details as we speak. Michelle Meow and Mia Macy. Yeah, that Mia Macy, who are co-hosts on the San Francisco radio show, Swirl. And so they're very cool. I just discovered them, as a matter of fact. They're awesome and a lot of fun. They even covered my big CNN debut on their last show. You can check them out. And we're working it out. We're going to have them on the show. So they are way cool. We love them. We officially love them now. So, and let's see. Okay. Dana, you're on? Can you hear me?
So I'm here.
Awesome. Okay. We've got Dr. Dana Byer, who, of course, is the executive director of Gender Rights Maryland. And Dana, I wanted to have you on tonight because I know that the Maryland trans rights bill is coming up for a vote. You were telling me possibly as early as Tuesday. I wonder if you can give us an idea of where we are on it, how likely it seems to pass, and all that stuff like that there.
Yeah, all that jazz, yeah. It's 10 years since Chicago won the Academy Award with all that jazz. the first vote, this is just the first step. You got a little bit ahead of yourself. We had our first public hearing on Tuesday, and the first vote in that committee will be probably next Tuesday, if not then on Thursday. We get out of the committee. We then go to the Senate floor. And after the Senate floor, we pass that. We go to the House at the end of March. It's almost March in a few hours. And then we go through the House. Session ends on April 9th. So, you know, we have a relatively limited window, but everything's laid out. We are following our timetable, and things look great. This is, the world has changed, and this year is very, very different from the past, primarily because marriage equality was voted in by the residents of Maryland, which proved to the Senate leadership that Maryland was a little bit more progressive than they had thought, and as a result, they're letting our bill through. That's how the political system works. Some people would like to believe that if they just show up at a hearing and give a passionate story, then they will be able to sway everybody and their protections will be made into law, but it doesn't work that way. But this year, I think it's going to happen.
So talk a little bit about that, because I know last time when the last time this bill was potentially up for a vote, it was killed, according to a lot of reports, by Senate President Mike Miller, a Democrat. At the time, he called the bill anti-family. So he's really done a reversal on this, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. But, you know, it's when you're not there, you're not living in the state, you're not really paying attention, you don't know how the system works. In this state, the power to pass legislation doesn't lie with the governor. The governor, our governor in Maryland, is the most powerful governor in the country because of his power to set budgets and such. And the legislature cannot add money to a budget, it can only remove funds. But when it comes to allowing bills to be heard, either in committee or on the floor, or how they move on the floor, the Senate president and in the House, the Speaker, are in control of that. So, and that's nothing new for a legislature. So in a way, the Senate president here gets to bear the burden of, well, he killed the bill, which, yeah, he didn't want the bill to be heard, so it didn't get heard. Last year, it wasn't because he thought it was anti-family. It was because marriage equality was taking up all the time and effort, and there was not time to do our bill as well, in his mind. This year,
we can only do one LGBT bill a session or some silliness like that?
Yeah, well, back in the day, back in 2001 and 2007, 2008, when we were doing smaller gay bills, it was possible to do three or four, but they were small modifications to inheritance law, transfer taxes, medical decision making. They weren't big bills, and as a result, they weren't massively controversial. Last year was marriage equality, and you know, and everybody knows what a big deal that was last year with the president coming out in support of marriage equality in May. So there's been momentum. There's been focus. The governor ran that campaign last year. Now that's over. Now there are no more gay bills. The gay agenda is over. Now it's our turn, and the governor is fully supportive, and we've got Senate leadership and House leadership. We have more than enough votes in the Senate and more than enough votes in the House. Now, there are no guarantees in politics. You never know. It's not over till it's over, but we have the support that we need to move this bill through.
Excellent, excellent. That is so good to hear. And so now I guess what we're looking at is, assuming that everything goes according to plan, are you expecting that this will actually become law by the end of this session or what? For those who are not familiar with the Maryland process.
I don't see any reason why we won't have this bill passed early April and the governor will sign it a few weeks later after the session's over.
Excellent, excellent. That's really, really good to hear. Another question. Whoa, what's that? Hello. Another question I wanted to ask you.
I don't know what that is.
I don't know. Wasn't me. But another question I wanted to ask you was, one thing I've been seeing, and pleasantly surprised to see, I have to say, is that the Human Rights Campaign seems to have gotten a little bit more involved. They've been issuing press releases. Apparently there's folks from the HRC working with this effort. In your opinion, do you think, are they making a concerted effort on this bill? And do you see, as somebody who's worked with HRC over the years, do you see them making more of an effort on trans issues and trans relevant issues in general?
Well, see, that's a complicated question. Yes, HRC has sent representatives to our legislative committee. An HRC lawyer testified, Sarah Warbelow. She did a very good job reviewing our experience passing county laws here, which we've done three of in the past 6 years. HRC has been putting out press releases, and I will say this, having been on the board, HRC's foundation has done great work for the trans community, probably most importantly through its CEI, the Corporate Equality Index. Well, today, I believe the number is 57% of the Fortune 500 companies offer trans-related health care. That is huge. And I think people don't recognize, in this country where corporations are people, after all, how important business is in moving equality forward. I see this happening everywhere. And I would say, and I've heard others who've agreed with me, that HRC's greatest contribution to equality, both gay and trans, has been through its work with its business council dealing with corporate anti-discrimination policies and now corporate health care. You need to provide trans health care in order to get 100% on the CEI. This is moving that ball forward. And now I see companies vying with one another to offer even more comprehensive plans. For instance, Accenture has now leaped ahead of IBM as offering the most comprehensive plans available, including mammoplasty, including facial feminization surgery. There are things that to me were inconceivable just 2 years ago, and now they are part of this sort of competition for quality employment. And I think that's fantastic. So oftentimes when people think of HRC, they just think of the C4, the lobbying group, you know, pushing in the White House and this and that. And when it comes to that, no, they haven't been great. And I'm disappointed that there are no trans staffers at HRC now. I keep being promised that there will be. I believe that there will be. There's only one trans board member.
Yeah.
Now, these are corporate cultures, nonprofit corporate cultures that are hard to change. And you got to keep pushing. But you have to push civilly and respectfully, and that change will come. But in Maryland now, we have done so much. We've got the vote. You know, all this stuff, or who's supporting us and who isn't supporting us. We've had a coalition of groups, both LGBT and non-LGBT, that have been supporting us for years. It's just that after last year, after passing two county bills, after the 11th Circuit decision in Glenn, after the Macy decision in April, after the DSM depathologization in December, all of these things together with the Obama campaign, the president's support of marriage equality and trans rights, and, you know, we've talked about just how incredible the Obama administration has been on that on virtually every level, from passports to VA benefits, you name it, they have been doing it and continue to do it. That has created a shift. We could feel it in Charlotte.
Well, along those lines,
national convention. I was there. I was a Maryland delegate, and I was there with my Senate president. And I could see him changing as he was at the convention and watching all the rainbow flags. We were 8% of the convention delegates. You couldn't miss us.
Right? Now, another thing I wanted to ask you before I let you go, because we're running short on time, but another thing I wanted to ask you before you go is, of course, we're going to get into this a little bit later, but the Violence Against Women Act passed with trans-inclusive, LGBT-inclusive, against a lot of predictions. How significant do you think that this is, that this is our second piece of fully inclusive LGBT-inclusive federal legislation?
Well, I think it's significant on two levels. Number one, that this is becoming the norm. People look at this, they say it's 2013, of course we would include this. Domestic violence, intimate partner violence amongst gay couples is just as prevalent as it is amongst straight couples, so why not? And we're including Native Americans in here too. To have left them out in the first place was absurd, but we know where that comes from. But I think more importantly, what this signals is that John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, realized he couldn't fight this. He couldn't put up some, you know, fake battle over this. And he brought that bill to a vote, allowing Democrats and a group of Republicans who weren't extremists on the, you know, teabaggers on the right to bring this to a vote and to pass it. To me, that's the most hopeful aspect. That it's an LGBT inclusive bill on top of it, that's fantastic. But I'm hoping this signals that the Congress is ready to move forward and do those things upon which most Americans agree. And I would hope immigration reform will be the next big push, and that will be LGBT inclusive as well. Because I know enough trans people who have been treated very badly by the system, and I want to see that change.
Absolutely. Well, Dana, thank you so much for coming on. I hope you can come on, you know, a little later on, once we know more about where the Maryland effort is going, and we can give another update. I would really hope you'll come on, because, you know, you're always great when you come on. I love having you on the show, because you're always...
Thanks. May I make an announcement, Becky? Somebody else...
Absolutely.
I don't know if you saw the news, but PFLAG, National PFLAG, hired Diego Sanchez as their director of policy yesterday.
Ooh, so okay. You know, I had heard something about that.
National PFLAG.
That's awesome. And, of course, as I said earlier in the show, Diego is going to be a guest. And when he mentioned that he had to check with PFLAG before he scheduled, I didn't think anything of it. But now I know why. Okay, cool.
Well, there you go. And that'll make a huge difference. PFLAG has been great for the trans community with support groups and such. And now Diego's going to make them even better.
Absolutely. I couldn't think of a better choice. Absolutely. Well, that's terrific. Dana, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us, and we'll be talking to you again very soon, I have a feeling.
Okay.
All right. Talk to you soon.
My pleasure.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. All right. And that was, of course, Dana Beyer, Executive Director of Gender Rights Maryland. Very exciting news. We're looking forward to it. Looks like we're going to push the ball over the goal line this time, finally. Next, we got Leslie Mariah. What's her name?
Andrews.
Andrews. I'm losing my freaking mind here.
We don't usually
have two guests on, and I'm so confused.
And the confused producer also is pushing buttons simultaneously. It's amazing
and
what
she
happens here.
Is a host on Radio Free Joshua Tree, so another trans host, and so needless to say, I couldn't resist. And speaking of trans radio hosts, we'll be doing that again when we have the Ladies of Swirl on the show at a couple of I don't know exactly what date they'll be on, but they will be good. Okay, and Leslie is on. Leslie, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you just fine. How are you?
Awesome. Okay, now we should let I'm going to give you an introduction. I'm going to let you finish it because I am not as familiar with, I'm not really familiar with your show, but you host, you are a trans woman, you host a radio show called Radio Free Joshua Tree, and tell us what that's about exactly.
Actually, the show is called Kitten Time with Leslie Mariah Andrews. Radio Free Joshua Tree is a station that I work for, that I'm hosting. But the show itself is called Kitten Time with Leslie Mariah Andrews every Friday night Pacific time at 11 o'clock.
Oh, cool. Okay, so that's real late. For us, that's 2 a.m. out here on the left coast. But is it a music show, or do you do talk? What do you cover?
It's a combination of the two. I talk about my favorite local music, music from the Joshua Tree area, music that my family has recorded over the last 30 years, my personal music that I have recorded with two different outfits, with River Vixen, which is my solo material from 1995 to 2010, and my current band called The Small Wonder Experience, which we've had since 2011.
Interesting. Okay, and I happen to know Mr. Mike happens to be our music diva on this show, already has one of your songs queued up for our break. So now let me ask you a question, because I saw that you did a radio show, and immediately I said, ooh, another trans radio host. This is cool. And one of the reasons why I thought it was cool is because there are so few of us out there. And I'm curious as to you know, what kind of an audience you have, and where exactly is the Joshua Tree area? Because I think a lot of listeners don't know.
Joshua Tree is about 45 miles northeast of Palm Springs,
Phone
California. However, my audience is mainstream. I appeal to a regular, generic audience. We're not targeted at any particular sexual orientation, gender identity. We are a all ages, all inclusive show.
Very cool. You know, that's very different from a lot of the trans-hosted shows, such as this one, for example, where we cover stuff that, well, nobody else is going to cover because they don't care about trans issues. So how often this is on Friday nights at 11? Are you on an hour, 2 hours?
We're on for 1 hour approximately every Friday night. There's a new show every single week.
Very cool. Very cool. And so how would folks tune into your show?
Real simple. Just go to RadioFreeJT.com or RadioFreeJoshuaTree.com. All one word.
Cool. And do you get involved with the activism or anything? I know you and I met on Facebook, so I'm not, you know, we don't know each other in, quote, offline. But I was wondering, are you involved in the activism efforts in your local area?
Well, I'm involved in the music scene and the generic music scene because the rest of my band members are non-transgender. I got two genetic girls and one genetic boy in my band. Hmm.
Interesting. Now, let me ask you a question. I've always been curious about this. As somebody who is a transgender performer, do you get a lot of hassle about that? Is that a problem for you in getting gigs or in performing and stuff like that?
At first, yes. But when people realize that I can play guitar like Jimi Hendrix behind my neck, you know, that kind of overrides a lot of gender confusion questions that people have. You know, people overlook it, you know, simply because of the fact that I have a different type of playing ability. You know, I'm not, you know, I'm not a effing drag queen. You know, I mean, no offense to drag queens.
No.
But, you know, my different...
But you can play, and that's what people are interested in.
Also myself, the fact that I play regular music, not always transgender related, but mostly, you know, very political, social issues. I'm like Bob Dylan, basically. I'm like Bob Dylan's transgendered daughter, illegitimate.
I'm trying to picture that one right now. It's okay. It's an interesting image there. So now I gotta ask you, what do you think? I mean, all of a sudden, there are artists who are that I didn't know. I mean, even 5 years ago, you've got people like Nomalee Brennett, people like Laura Jane Grace on the scene. Do you think this is a trend, or do you see something, you know, happening on the music scene that's trans inclusive, or is it just, coincidence that these artists are emerging all around the same time?
I say it's a phenomenon. You know, why? It's because there's a lot of positive trans related news in the news. You know, of course, you know, you got children as young as 6 years old, you know, dealing with issues of transitioning at school. You got a Girl Scout, you know, who born a boy, but, you know, the Colorado State Girl Scout chapter wanted inclusion, so they let her join. And that, by the way, inspired the writing of a song that I wrote called Living in a Better World, which is a regular from my band, Small Wonder Experience, sung by my Gigi singer, Tara Young.
Cool. So that's cool. So, and do you play in the area regularly? Do you tour? What do you do as far as that goes?
I play regularly with Ted Quinn, a former child star from the 1960s, who has a weekly show also on Radio Free Joshua Tree and has a live show on Tuesday night at a place called the Joshua Tree Saloon. And I'm a regular there because I sometimes play in regular backing bands. I'm a multi-instrumentalist. I play the bass, I play drums, and I play guitar. And I play behind non-transgender musicians quite often. And I've never received any negative reviews from my musical playing ability, you know, because I don't overdo it. I don't, you know, I try not to overpower any other musician. I fit right in, and that's the reason why I believe that I am respected the way I am.
That's awesome to hear. You know, I'm always interested when I hear of a trans person going into a field there's not a lot of representation, and that always interests me. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on. because you know you're really involved in two fields where we're not really well represented in terms of being a musical performer and in terms of being a radio host. And I'm also wondering, do you take calls on your show, and do you get a lot of audience participation in your show?
No, it's all pre-taped due to the fact that at this time, I work a regular night job on Friday.
Ah.
You see, I'm employed. Believe it or not, I'm actually employed as a security officer.
Oh, really? I used to do that.
And I don't have to revert back to being a male for my security guard role. They hired me as is. They accept me just fine at the job, and I have no complaints, you know. A lot of people, however, think that I'm a traitor. A lot of fellow trans people do not like the fact that I work in an inferior field. Some people think I'm like a Bernardine Arnold or something, you know. People think that I'm not really cool in my community. But you know what? I feel like I'm the devil's advocate for the security, you know, field because of the fact that security officers can sometimes be our enemies. Because of the fact that there's a lot of them that are wannabe police officers that enforce their personal bias rather than the law.
As always, I mean, these are people, and different people have different attitudes. And I mean, I think it's great that you're in a field that, you know, and you're doing what you got to do in order to make a few bucks. You know, I mean, there are a lot of us who would like a job like that. That's, you know, it may not be glamorous, but it's reliable. And, you know, before transition, I was a security guard for a while, one of my many jobs. There's nothing wrong with doing that. So anyway, I think that's so cool. And so do you have anything on the front musically, a new album or something you're going to be...
We have an album through smallwonderexperience.com, which is my personal website, and the album is called Love Flaming Desire. It is our debut album as a band, produced by Tara Young and her husband. You know, they worked tirelessly and long hard hours to make our sound good. I wrote six of the songs on that album, and the rest is written by Tara, of course.
Uh-huh.
And believe it or not, I have searched. I've been playing music since I was 11 years old, and it's taken me 20 years to find the right band.
That sounds familiar. It's a team.
People in my life.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Leslie, I want to say thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. This has been awesome. Let me just remind people that they can tune in. You can search you out, Radio Free Joshua Tree. You can look them up on Facebook. And it's also www.radiofreejt.com. And we will play you out with one of your own songs. And thanks for coming on. We'll talk to you soon.
Oh, wonderful, Becky. You have a good night.
Okay, everybody. We'll catch you in about 5. Here's Leslie Mariah Andrews and her song.
1.
All right, we are back. It's the Rebecca Juro Show. Thanks for sticking around. Had a great first hour. Dr. Dana Beyer with our report on the Maryland bill. We had Leslie Mariah Andrews.
That's a great fun stuff. Video. It's on YouTube.
And, yeah, so check that out.
Done in Joshua Tree, it looks like. That's where the late Captain Beefheart lived. And it looks like Captain Beefheart Company. Country. Country.
Well, I promised you we were going to talk about the Violence Against Women Act tonight. And I got to tell you, this is a big deal. This is a real, just like Dana was saying earlier, this is a big deal. NCTE issued a press release. I'll give you a little bit of that. Today, the National Center for Transgender Equality celebrates the passage of a strong bipartisan Violence Against Women Act, which now heads to President Barack Obama for his signature. And I'll say as an aside, he has pledged to sign it. This was one of NCTE's top priorities for the year. This was on their list that they were handing out at the event last weekend. And what's interesting about this, and of course, there's a quote from Mara Kiesling, Mara, who we're going to have on the show next week. And there's a quote from her saying, "We are pleased that the House passed a Strong Violence Against Women Act, ensuring key protections for all survivors of violence. This is so important to the many transgender people who experience violence and abuse almost daily. VAWA will give all of our communities, LGBT, immigrant, and Native American, the access we need to services that protect us from abuse." One of the statistics that they cite from, of course, the Injustice at Every Turn study is that 19% of the 6,500 of transgender and gender nonconforming people that they used in this survey, 19% have experienced domestic abuse from a family member because of their gender identity. 10% faced a denial of equal treatment or harassment and disrespect in domestic violence or shelter programs because of gender identity. And an additional 1% said they were physically assaulted in a domestic violence or shelter program because of their gender identity. You know, and so this is really, really super important that this got passed, okay? And it's not because it's there's two factors here, at least for us, for the trans community, and let's be honest, for the greater LGBT community, there are two factors at play here. Of course, it's the basic bill itself. I mean, violence against women. I don't know how you can be against protecting women from violence. I mean, that seems like a no-brainer to me, kind of like the hate crimes bill. I mean, you can argue up and down about marriage. You can argue up and down about workplace rights. But, you know, protections against people getting beaten and brutalized, I don't see how there's really two sides of that argument. But yet the Republicans did try to find one. And in their first, the House bill, they had removed protections for LGBT women. Women like us. Okay, now I'm fortunate I'm not in a situation where I have to confront situations like domestic violence in my home. That's me. You know, I'm very lucky in that way. Maybe not you. And the fact that there are going to be resources for these women is so, so important. And on top of that, it is only the second bill now to become law ever in the history of the United States of America that is fully LGBT inclusive, with the first being the hate crimes bill, or now the hate crimes law, I should say. Okay, so this is huge. I think it indicates that there's a trend here. Like Dana was saying earlier, I think there's a trend. Whereas once this was an arguable thing, now when the Republicans try to argue it, they're losing, and they're losing fast. And you're seeing how fast it's crumbling. And you know what it makes me wonder? Maybe this is the year for Enda. Maybe it really is. As unbelievable, you see, because I have trouble believing that John Boehner would bring it up for a vote. But then again, I had trouble believing that the House would pass this Violence Against Women Act. So maybe I'm wrong. I don't live in D.C. I don't work in the Capitol. I don't have a read on these things. And by the way, one person who has worked in the Capitol recently is going to be joining us very soon. Diego Sanchez is going to, now he's now with BFLAG. He's going to be joining us. I'm very excited about that. Been trying to get him back on the show for a long time now. And, you know, I mean, people are busy, and so sometimes it takes a while to get these things coordinated, but we're going to have him on. Just traded email with him yesterday. He promised he's coming on the show, so we're going to have him on. He is one of the smartest political minds in our community, and that will be great. Don't forget, of course, until he just retired, he was a senior aide for Congressman Barney Frank, who is, well, shall we say, still, I think, probably something of a controversial figure. It would be interesting. I would love to, and this probably isn't going to happen right now, because right now Barney's shopping around for a book deal, at least according to what he said on Matto several days ago. But I would love to have him, now that he's not in Congress anymore. You know, and this is just me, you know, trans radio girl fantasizing about guests. I would love to have Barney Frank on my show and say and ask him, okay, dude, so you're out of Congress. You don't have anybody to defend. You're not protecting anybody. Talk to me. What was the real problem in 2007 that made you dump us off? And does it exist today? Can we get an inclusive Enda pass through this modern Congress? And why? And I think this is the question that I would really like to know the answer to, that I've been waiting for an answer to for, well, 3 years now, 4 years now, really. Why didn't it get through the 111th Congress when they had everything that they said they needed to get the bill done? What was the real problem there? Was it that somebody said, you know, was it, I mean, we assume, you know, we don't have fact, but we assume it was HRC that was pushing for don't ask, don't tell, and the defense of marriage, or don't ask, don't tell, and, you know, to go first. And the hate crimes bill, well, the hate crimes bill, you can understand. The hate crimes bill was a gimme, let's be honest. So I would love to ask Barney Frank. But I will instead ask our good friend and the guy who was, you know, on his team for a long time, what he thinks. And of course, we will definitely hit that with Mara next week. If you have questions, of course, for Mara Kiesling, who's going to be on the show next week, drop me a line. You can always drop me a line. I'm always up for a good question. I will hit it. I will even give you full credit on the air if you want it. And you can get in touch with me, rjuroshow@gmail.com. I'm always up for it. Always up for, you know. And, of course, I should remind you that our phone lines, as always, tonight, are open. 928-277-4921. So give us a call. Did you hear what we were talking about earlier? Did you have something to say about that? Got something else to throw in there? You know where to find us. It's easy. It's real easy. 928-277-4921. Give us a call. Now, let's see. So the Violence Against Women Act, I think it's critically important that this passed. And it's, you know, it's a step forward. I mean, if you can't protect people from hate crimes, if you can't protect people from violence, you know, against women, you know, and I think what's important here is that very quietly, trans women in particular, and trans men as well, but I think trans women particularly, because let's be honest, we're the most visible. I mean, it's funny. Sorry, guys. You know how you always say, oh, it's a male-dominated world. Well, in the trans world, it's kind of female-dominated because women are the ones who are in a lot of cases, are running things, who are the highest up, white trans women. And, you know, I mean, there was a lot. And Monica Roberts made this point at the event last weekend and other people, and they were absolutely right to make the point. That there aren't a lot of people of color in leadership positions in our community in particular. There just aren't. And there should be. I mean, there should be a lot more. Problem is, I think, big part of the problem is that there aren't enough leadership positions in our community, period. And I think there should be. I mean, you know, you see somebody like Allison Robinson, for example, who is trans, who is heading a major organization, and not just a trans organization, but an LGBT organization. I think that says something. It says something about where the community is going, where it's not, you know, there used to be that I think, and I'm theorizing here. Some people, please feel free, call me and straighten me out if you don't think I'm telling you. You know, but in my opinion, it seems like being trans, simply the fact of being trans, is less of an issue now. More now it's more about who's best for the job. And trans is less of a thing. I won't say it's not a thing, but it's less of a thing. And so that's a good thing. And that's, I think, is represented by this passage of the Violence Against Women Act. You know, the trans women are women. And this bill, even though it doesn't explicitly, you know, say that, it acknowledges that. And I think that's so important because we are, as women, as trans women, are probably among the most vulnerable subgroups in the country. Because we wear it out there. I mean, this is not a dig against trans men, please. It's not. But let's be honest. A trans guy, you know, he has the top surgery or he starts wearing a binder. He grows a beard. He has hormones. His voice changes. You know, they can woodwork a lot better than we can, generally speaking, okay? It was like I said in that video I did for CNN. You hear this voice coming out of this face, and you're going to know something's up. Whereas a trans man can do much better. It's not as jarring. He can go through life in a lot of cases, and nobody's going to know unless somebody tells him. And so I think there is a difference there. And the fact that the trans women are included in this, without question, and as women, as part of the category of women, well, to me, as a trans woman, it's affirming, and it feels right. But I'm still... And I hate to keep going back to this, but I'm sorry, but I think it matters. I think when the president is still dragging his feet on this executive order, you know, it bothers me. It's like, you know, it seems like on the one hand, the Obama administration was like, well, you know, look at all this great stuff we've done for you. And we're back here saying, yeah, but dude, it doesn't help us get a job. We need jobs. You know, I mean, yes, it's great that the Violence Against Women Act passed. Yes, it's great that the hate crimes bill passed. Yes, it's great that you made these housing regulations and these hospital regulations. Yes, these things are great. Okay, and in fact, there was a recent at the at Huffington Post, there was this whole article that basically defined all the things that the Democrats have done, or all the things that the Obama administration has done. And there are some amazing stuff that they've done. And people say, in fact, I just had somebody tell me this today. They said, oh, well, you know, what more could you ask? You know, he's done all these other things. It's like, well, I could ask for jobs. I could ask for the same thing any other American citizen is. Help me get a job. That's what I want. I mean, you know, we hear these things that say, oh, well, you know, the president has made clear that his administration will treat LGBT Americans, this is from Shin Inui, White House spokesman, by the way, as fairly as possible, consistent with existing law, and the steps we've taken reflect that policy. Yeah, but existing law says it's legal in 34 states to fire us and to treat us badly and to discriminate against us freely. That's what you're content with? No, I don't think so. I'm sorry. This is bullshit. I mean, you know, they say, oh, isn't it wonderful? Gays and lesbians can serve openly in the military. It's like, well, what about trans people? When are we going to talk about that? You know, everybody is so focused in Washington about making the rich gays and lesbians happy over the human rights campaign that they're forgetting about the rest of us. And you know, I think some of the senators, I think there's a faction in Washington that is starting to pick up on this finally, even if the White House is not. And they're saying, you know what, let's issue a letter to the White House saying they should saying Obama should sign that executive order. 37 Democratic senators signed it. Now, it's worth pointing out, however, 37. So what that means is that since there are 55 senators who are Democratic, well then, logically, what does that mean? That means that there are 13 senators who are Democrats who chose not to sign this letter. I'd like to know who they are and why they chose not to sign. Wouldn't you? I mean, really. And what does that mean? What does that mean in the context? Okay, I mean, when you hear Tom Harkin, who I love him. I think he's one of our heroes. I wish he'd be a little more aggressive on our issues, but you know what? He's always where we need him to be. I have nothing bad to say about Tom Harkin as a senator in terms of his values, in terms of the effort he has put in on ENDA. But when he says he's going to move ENDA this year, I mean, we've heard this before. What does that mean? Does that mean he's going to drop it in the hopper and maybe take a committee vote? Does that mean it gets a markup? Does that mean it gets a vote in the full Senate? What does it mean? See, this is the game that they play with us all the time. Yeah, we're going to do something. Really, we will. Just keep waiting and waiting and waiting. And, oh, have you forgotten about it yet? Yeah, okay, we're moving on. You know, I mean, that's what it seems to be. Every time they make us a promise, they wait until they figure that we've forgotten about it, which we don't, and they just move on. So, you know, again, I like Tom Harkin. I trust Tom Harkin. I think he's a good guy. I wish we had a dozen more just like him. But until I see something, until I see a vote, until I see a markup, until I see real action being taken by this Senate, I have trouble believing it because there's so much of a history. I say this all the time. Please, Senator Harkin, Democrats in the Senate, prove me wrong. Show me that I'm behind the times. Show me that I don't know what I'm talking about. Show me that the United States Senate, the Democratic Party, is ready to deal with this issue openly, honestly, and aggressively. Show me that. show me that what I believe, based on the last 15, 20 years of what you, games you people have been playing, is not the way you do things anymore. Show me. I mean, really, I am willing to be convinced. I am begging to be convinced. Seriously. This is an easy one. And you know what? Who knows? If we can get the Violence Against Women Act through the House, maybe ENDA isn't that big of a stretch after all. I mean, because after all, don't forget, all of a sudden, you've seen these Republicans coming out for marriage, right? Well, if they can come out for marriage, shouldn't we be able to expect them to come out for jobs? Jobs, jobs, jobs. You can come out for gay marriage. Can't you come out for jobs? I think that's an argument that's begging to be made.
Jobs,
I really
jobs,
do.
Jobs, 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 jobs,
jobs, jobs, jobs, jobs, jobs, jobs. And while we jobs, ponder jobs, that jobs, little jobs, item, so all right, well, we got a break coming up. We are going to take a quick break, and your song right now is Zuma by Coyote Grace. We will catch you again in five. We used to do a show called Transistor Radio.
Did you ever play Freddie Cannon on your show?
I don't think we did. No, I don't think we did.
Yeah,
that was back in the early days when I and a certain other individual first started our show.
Yeah,
who we won't mention here. But anyway, thanks for sticking around, boy. You know, there's just so much darn news. We're not even done with it yet because there's so much stuff. We've talked about Maryland. We've talked about the Violence Against Women Act. We've talked music with Leslie Mariah Andrews. We've talked all kinds of stuff. But here's yet another one. GENDA, apparently, is moving. GENDA, of course, is the Gender Expression Non-Discrimination Act, the New York trans rights bill. And this is actually comes from us... From Drew Cordes, who writes for Bolerico. We're hoping to have Drew and possibly another person on at some point in the future. Have not yet arranged that. I sent an email off to somebody who I was told to send it off to. Haven't yet gotten a response, but we're working on that. But let me read a little bit of what Drew wrote here. Basically, what's going on is there's a series of posts on transgender non-discrimination efforts in New York, centering around Equality and Justice Day, Tuesday, April 30th, in the state capitol, in Albany. This is the year that they're hoping that the transgender rights law, GENDA, will finally become law. She writes... With the LGBT rights movement having been focused for so long on marriage equality, we're now starting to see some pushback, drawing attention to other aspects of our community's struggle for justice, employment, housing, access to medical care, homelessness, and abuse of youth. Unfortunately, the list goes on. The LGBT fight thus far has focused on marriage equality largely because of our institutionally biased systems of power. I.e. the concerns of our white, wealthy, less threatening male members become the primary concerns of the entire LGBT movement. She adds, I'm not saying marriage equality shouldn't be a concern, but if you've seen the homeless, abuse, suicide, depression statistics on LGBT youth, go take a look and then earnestly tell me all the movement's eggs should go into the basket of helping the wealthy white gay male couple. Drew continues, justice and empowerment for trans people unfortunately has been among the causes non-celeb, which is very true. Lately, it started to gain more traction and vocal proponents. CNN recently reported, on the trans people, the problems we face with employment. That was my interview that we did. Now I'm going to jump around here a little bit. Gender has always been stalled. I think it's passed the assembly in New York like 4 or 5 times. It always gets stuck in the state Senate. But we're hoping that this is the year. Now, my issue with gender has always been that it seems like, we remember when Governor Cuomo, when marriage was up, he was rah-rah, always out there. Since it's been gender and all the big money, from the Human Rights Campaign and these other really super wealthy gay organizations has dried up, all of a sudden, it seems like, Governor Cuomo can't find the time to bother to stand up for this, which, of course, he promised us. But, that's what Democrats do. Let me put it this way. That's what Democrats have done for the last couple of decades. Okay. Again, want to prove me wrong? Please, please, please go ahead and do so. But we haven't seen, since Governor Cuomo, since they won the marriage bill, since they won the marriage law, since Governor Cuomo took his victory lap with his pockets open all the way, that's it. Nothing. This is what Governor Cuomo calls support. This is what he calls advocacy. This is what I call bullshit. Okay. I mean, really, it's about damn time. It's interesting. And one of the people who we're going to have on at some point, I'm sure I'll be asking him about this, is Matt Forman. Matt Forman, some of you may know, was the executive director of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force for a few years. But before he was there, he was also the president of the Empire State Pride Agenda. At the time when the Sexual Orientation Non-Discrimination Act was being passed, and they made the decision to ban transgender advocates from even participating in the discussions, including, I might add, State Senator Tom Duane, who is either, I don't know if he has retired or he's about to retire or something. He's getting ready to retire or he just retired. I'm not exactly sure. But in any case, what happened was, it passed. They banned trans. They kicked us out, basically. It was one of the most, frankly, I'm just going to say it. I like Matt Forman. I think he's a good guy. But this was one of the most transphobically bigoted political maneuvers I think I've ever seen. I mean, it wasn't even, they were just blatant. I mean, they just basically said, we don't care about you, get out, basically. Dion Stalwart says, don't forget the seniors, please. In terms of transgender, well, we talked about, I should mention this, that at the convening last weekend, one of the issues that we talked about was seniors and the issues associated with aging. And I am very excited to see some of the things that are going on around that, that people are really starting to prepare for this. And they're starting to, do it with an eye towards accommodating the realities that people live through. So, for example, that a lot of LGBT seniors, because of discrimination, don't have the kind of social security checks coming in that the average person does because they spend a lot of time out of work. And you know what? Dion Stalworth is exactly right. We must not forget our seniors. I will say that the senior housing building that they're building right now. Looks very promising. I mean, it's kind of hard to tell. Literally, the only thing that we saw when we went to the site was some girders sticking out of a, you know, a nice mat of concrete. So, I mean, it's not anything yet. They literally just started building this thing. But it's promising because it shows that that the communities are starting to plan for the future, and that we, you know, what do we do with these folks? You know, because we're gonna, there's a lot more people who are out and open, and as we become more out and open in our middle age or our youth, well, there's going to be that many of more of us who are already identified that are seniors, but become seniors.
You know, it occurs to me, I've had elderly relatives in nursing homes over the past, a decade or so. And it occurs to me that nursing homes, for instance, are not very safe places for LGBT seniors. Don't you think? They have to go back into the closet. It's a hideous situation where there's a lot of homophobia around a place like that.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I can only hope that this gets better as time goes on and as, frankly, our seniors are become more – have lived longer in a world without an open LGBT people. A lot of the folks who are seniors now lived most of their lives where this was hidden and you know, discriminated against, and they grew up in that culture, whereas that's becoming less and less the case over time because – youth is not growing up with these bigotries, and there's a lot more openness over the last 20, 30 years. And so we're hoping, you know, you hope that, that as time goes on and as the culture matures, that there will be less of that. I mean, obviously, there's always going to be some, you know, and it's going to take a while. I mean, you know, some people don't die so fast, you know, but that's... But actually, we have Dion Stallworth on the line. Hi, Dion. How you doing?
Hello.
Hey, Dion.
Is she on?
I think so. She's adjusting her microphone. Hi there, Dion. It's a Skype thing. She's on.
I thought we had another guest. I was so excited.
It would be fantastic.
Oh, come on.
Well, let's go on with the show, and I'll talk to Dion.
Let's go on. I'll keep talking. You try and get her back on. I would love to have her on. That would be awesome.
Dion, are you there? Hello?
No, not yet. Okay. But, yeah, getting back to what she was saying, I mean, it's important to talk about trans and lesbian and gay seniors, you know, and I'll tell you know what else was really interesting at this event during the first night when we had the dinner at Comcast, which was really lovely presentation. Two gentlemen who spoke and took questions were David Mixner, who is the well-known gay man who's an advocate. It's been around a lot of years. And, of course, I would almost go so far to call him legendary gay rights activist Cleve Jones was there. And Cleve Jones, who I got to speak to for a little while, we're hoping to have him on the show at some point in the near future because he's terrific. We actually had a really, really good discussion. And I'm looking forward to talking to him because here's a guy who really has the long view, you know? And I think not only is it important that we take care of our seniors, that we look out for our seniors, that we make sure that their senior years are as comfortable and as, you know, inclusive as possible, for lack of a better term, but also that we tap their brains, that we learn. I mean, literally, these folks are living history. Our living history. And we need to take advantage of that. You know, if I could go back in time, I would love to have had the opportunity, for example, to have interviewed Sylvia Rivera. Now, I met her once. In New York City, I was a fledgling activist. I was at an event, and she showed up. And it was like the whole room just stopped. And just, I mean, it was like, you know, Mother Teresa had just come by. I mean, it was like, you know, it was, she had that kind of reverence. And deservedly so. I would have loved to have interviewed her. Unfortunately, she died at the beginning of the 2000s, and I was not yet in a position where I could do that. So that's a disappointment for me. And you want to be able to talk to these folks and learn from them. I mean, I hate to put it this way, but, you know, while they're still here, while they're still with us, that we should learn what we can learn and use those lessons going forward. Because, you know, so much of what we're doing now has been done before and has been done differently. And, you know, and can be applied to where we are today. I guess, Mr. Mike, we didn't get the on?
We're still having a minor little issue here with Skype. For some reason, Skype's not letting our audio get back to Dion.
Oh, so, fuck.
So we're working on it, and she's online, but we're working out the kinks here. Which may take a while.
Well, then I'll just continue on for a second.
How kinky the producer is.
And you let me know. You can interrupt me whenever you decide you've got this working. But I just want to say it's important not just to make sure that we take care of these folks and that they're comfortable and welcomed and engaged and all that good stuff in their senior years, but also that we take the time to learn from them and that we use the knowledge that they've developed and that they've built up over the years to help educate and guide our movement. Because we can't really know where we're going unless we know where we've been. And a lot of these folks have been in those situations. They're fighting the fights. They were fighting those fights that we're fighting today in a lot tougher terrain. And I think they have a lot to teach us. And I think it would behoove us as a community to make more of an effort to listen to what they have to say. Not that we always agree, you know, but there's certainly a lot that we can learn from those who came before us, especially in our community, when you consider that really as a movement, as a focused movement, if you want, you can go back to the Mattachine Society in the late 50s, if you want to go back that far. But that wasn't really an organized movement. A bunch of people marching around in ties and skirts is not a movement. The movement became a movement at post-Stonewall. You know, and I think when you have that long view, you can understand better where we've come from and how we get to the next step. And so I'm looking forward. I'm hoping we're going to see if we can get Cleve Jones to come on the show and talk to us, because I think he's awesome, and he's I had some great discussion, great conversation with him, but also because I think he has a lot that we can learn from as a community, and that I think we need more of an effort. We need to spend more time with our own, with our trans elders, and we haven't. And that's partially that's the fault of people like me, partially that's the fault of the mainstream media, partially that's the fault of our print journalists. There's a lot of blame to go around as to why that's not happening. But I think we need to make more of an effort to make sure that it doesn't happen, or at least, at the very least, that it happens less. I think that's just where I'm coming from. And let's see, what else have we got here? There's some good stuff happened this week. So we got Jenda. We covered that. We covered all the LGBT rights. We covered VAWA. Oh my goodness, did we really cover it all? Here's something we haven't talked about yet. This is interesting. Apparently, the Obama administration is going to urge the Supreme Court to allow same-sex marriage to resume in California, according to Pete Williams of NBC News. Now, just as an aside, this is very interesting. I don't know how many people are aware of this, but back when he was a spokesman for the Pentagon, Pete Williams was outed as gay by Michelangelo Signorelli. That was going back about 15 years, I guess. And so it seems like, you know, anytime there's a story involving the Supreme Court or involving anything gay, Pete Williams seems to get it from NBC News. So anyway, Thursday, apparently today, is the deadline for the administration to submit a friend of the court brief in the Proposition 8 case, which will examine whether California voters had the right to ban same-sex marriage. Precise language and scope of the amicus brief is not known, but is expected to be filed later Thursday afternoon. Now, I've heard that it's already hit the internet. I have not personally had a chance to look at it. I'm also not a lawyer, so I don't know how much good that would do, even if I did. But, of course, needless to say, it is out there. Take a look. It's at this time, at the time that this was posted, it was unclear as to whether the brief will take the position that it is unconstitutional for any state to ban same-sex marriage, or whether it will only speak to the specific circumstances in California where voters narrowly voted to end gay marriage in 2008. Now, the interesting point about this here is what I think is a point of constitutional law that they're fighting over here. Is that it's one thing to say, well, we're going to rewrite our Constitution to make same-sex marriage illegal. It was never legal before, but now we're changing our Constitution to make it illegal under the Constitution. That, more than likely, and I'm not a lawyer again, so this is just me talking, is probably legal. However, what happened in California was that it was not legal. Then it became legal, and then it was repealed and made not legal again. And the question is can you do that? Can you pass a law making something legal and have it on an equal par with everybody and then take away that right, but only from a specific group of people? There's that many people are saying that that comes into conflict with equal protection under the law. That once it's legal, you can't turn around and say, well, we're going to have it go back to being illegal, but only for you. See, that's the thing. If it was never legal to begin with, that's one thing. But if you make it legal and then turn around and say, well, we're taking that right away from you and only you, well, then it gets a little murkier. So I think that's one of the issues that they're going to be taking on in the Supreme Court. And I think it's great that the Obama administration is doing this. It makes you just, again, every time I see something like this, I'm not saying this is not a good thing, and I'm not saying that this shouldn't be lauded and all that stuff. But yet you still have to ask the same question, don't you? If he can come out this far on gay marriage, why can't he sign that fucking executive order? Why is it he can stick his neck out this far on same-sex marriage, but he won't even sign an executive order that would protect more than 1 in 5 LGBT American workers? Why is it okay to do one, but not the other? I have yet to hear an explanation for that. I mean, I could have bought it back when they were still saying, well, you know, it's an election, maybe he's afraid. I'm having trouble with that. Oh, and we have Dion Stallworth on the phone. Dion, are you there?
Yeah, I finally made it in.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Fantastic.
It's like breaking into Fort Knox. I know.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to have to take a tranquilizer after this show.
Now, we've just got a few minutes, unfortunately, because we're going to wrap up soon. But now, you said something a little earlier. You said, don't forget about seniors. So why don't you expand a little on that and tell me what you were talking about?
You ever watch White Christmas?
You mean like the old movie?
Yeah, the Bing Crosby, the Bing Crosby, Danny Kaye thing. Yeah,
probably when I was
remake of Holiday Inn. Yeah, Mike knows I'm a big
I know
movie
that,
fan.
I'm an old timer, you know.
Hey, so am I, baby. So am I. It's not the age, it's the mileage.
There you go.
What happens with the generals when the generals come home? You know, everyone knows that they're the generals, but everyone says General who? You know, it's the whole thing. You mentioned Sylvia a lot of times, and I never met her. It would have been a great honor, and I consider it a great honor to have met. To have met some of the people who have played major roles in the movement. The problem is that such as Miss Major, as you know, and I like what you do too. And don't put yourself out of that. The thing is that we have all of this great technology that connects us to people far and near all over the world, but we are not mature enough or even strong enough to talk to people next door or in the same town. We get caught up in who's the current cock of the walk and all of that, and and it's we lose our history. We lose people. You know, it used to be back in the 70s, you live fast, die hard, and leave a pretty corpse. But most of us know if we live long enough that death may be a sweet release for the people who experience it, but the people who are left behind, it's not always quite so sweet. As I was explaining to someone else, if the people who are pushing marriage so hard would stop and see that equality for all people would not only take care of marriage, but it would put marriage on a stronger footing than just a simple marriage law. This was one of the first problems that was brought about when, in many challenges to Loving versus Virginia, which I think you probably know something about.
Yeah, and of course we should tell people that was the decision by the Supreme Court that made interracial marriage legal under the Constitution that found that. So I wanted to just mention that for those who didn't know the reference.
And see, that's important that you do, because as you know from various media outlets about Justice Scalia's shall we say, less than distinguishing commentary yesterday about the Voting Rights Act.
He said it was some kind of that the Voting Rights Act was some kind of racial entitlement.
Unbelievable. What?
Was to me just like, is he living in the same country as we are?
That guy is so out of touch.
He really is. I mean, the Bush legacy lives on.
Well, that's, you know, and while people talk about the Bush legacy, don't get me wrong, I voted for Obama twice.
So did I.
But, you know, I think he's a good guy. I think he does what he believes is right. But one wants to ask the questions at the same time. Have you noticed how many of Bush's moves in terms of militarily or our policy overseas that candidate Obama said that he would go up against and change, but now that he's sitting in the big chair, he hasn't changed? There are a lot of people who would say that in terms of where we are militarily and where we are in terms of our progress overseas, the way we deal with things, is not that very different from Bush. And I mean yeah. W, not the first one. I mean W, which is a very frightening thought.
You look at Guantanamo, you look at the drone program, yeah, those kind of things. Sure.
Yeah, you know.
Don't you think we have to be careful? I mean, you know, a lot of us, we like President Obama. We like the values that he says in these speeches. But as in our own case, as in the cases of the issues that involve LGBT rights, he is much better at making promises than he has been at keeping them. And, you know, I think there's some kind of a calculation on the part of the White House. Well, we gave you all these other things, so that should balance out the fact that we didn't give you the most important thing that everybody really needs most.
Well, the big thing doesn't work. The big thing that we found out, and this goes back to caring for our seniors and not discarding them, is the fact that there are very few people who are actually keeping the score. Most of the younger people are, and I don't think too many of them will remember this. You remember Billy Crystal's Fernando in Fernando's Corner, where he would say it is much better to look good than to feel good. Yes. I'll go in terms of what's happening in politics. Be a Democrat or Republican, it's much better to look good than to be good. Mm. And we are seeing too much of falling for the hype, and nobody's holding people accountable. And that's the problem. Most of these people are too young to remember the history or to even research the history. This is where we need to start to remember that we're the people that help create the history that they are now taking advantage of, and we probably could help them develop a lot more solid strategies for holding people accountable to make things better for not just us in our future, but for them in the immediate present.
Absolutely. I so totally agree with you. I only wish we could have gotten you on a little bit earlier because we'd have more minutes to talk. But I hope you'll call in again because you're great and I love having you on the show.
We're running out of time here. I'll be around. Absolutely.
You're getting another invite. I'm telling you that right now. So there. but unfortunately, we have got to wrap up this show because we are out of time. So thank you so much for calling in, and we will catch you again. We've got so many good guests to get to, but we are going to have you on again soon.
Count on it.
Awesome. All right, and that is the show. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you, as always, for supporting this media. We will catch you next week. Mara Kiesling. We're talking politics. You know it. Okay. Always a good discussion with Mara. Plus, well, who knows? Maybe we'll know what happened in Maryland or all kinds of fun stuff. We will catch you next week. Don't forget, we repeat the show in its entirety in about 5 minutes. So stick around for that if you missed any part of it. We'll catch you next week. Have a good week, everybody. Good night.
if we were going to go on a crusade across the nation and try to do away with the homosexuals, well, at least it's a fruit pie.
One. The old fart inside was now breathing freely from his perfume bottle atomizer air bulb invention.
His excited eyes, from within the dark interior glazed, watering in appreciation of his thoughtful preparation.
So heavy.